Martin Armstrong, great to have him back. Martin, welcome. Boy, you are...
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, always a pleasure to have you on talking Socrates and various other things. In fact, you know, people are always telling me, well, what does Socrates say today? And I say, well, you could become a private blog member over at armstrongeconomics.com and you would find out, right? Isn't that kind of the bottom line there?
Yeah, look, it forecasts over 1,000 instruments every day around the world. So it's... There's nobody writing it. The computer does it all.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is that you say that, now I recall you were actually in prison for a time, for people who forgot, they didn't hear the last time we had that conversation, because the feds essentially wanted your software. Didn't they want the software, to how you forecasted so accurately?
Yeah, they basically, you know, we kind of invented capital flow analysis. And I think what really sent them over the top was I had put out a forecast at our London conference in 98 and said, look, Russia's going to collapse when we give it about 30 days. What I didn't realize at the time was that somebody from the London Financial Times had, you know, snuck in the back. And next thing I know, you know, the day after, they put it on the front page of the London Financial Times. Of course, Russia collapsed. That was the long-term capital management crisis, right, and all that stuff. And so then they started blaming me, saying, oh, well, if I hadn't said that, it wouldn't have happened. You know, because all the bankers lost billions. But, you know, so then they called and they basically said, look, we want this model. And I offered to say, look, we'll run any study you want. And they simply flat out right said, no, we have to own it.
No, you have to understand, we're the great American empire. It belongs to us, I think, is essentially almost what they were trying to say. Huh?
Well, I think from their perspective, they didn't want any other intelligence to have the same results.
Got it. All right.
So I think really that's where it stemmed from. And so it just turned into a Mexican standoff. And I said, I'm not sorry. You know, you're putting me out of business if I give up my model.
Okay. Makes a lot of sense to me. Now, you have a book which is coming out. I have the first chapter or so of this. And it is rather timely. And it's going to be coming out here. I guess it's going to be here in the next few weeks here. Because you're going to be handing it out at the World Economic Conference next month.
Yes.
This is the plot to seize Russia. I mean, is that essentially what you think we are living through right now, the plot to seize Russia? It's not just about trying to push pooty-poot, as Bush would have said back in the day, you know, back into a less aggressive stance. What is your take on that?
No, I mean, you can even Google John McCain and Politico. They reported back in 2008, his anti-Russian rhetoric predated Putin. So it has never really mattered who was the head of Russia. I don't think they ever seem to get over the fact that communism simply fell of its own accord in China as well as in Russia. And, you know, they still say, oh, you know, it's communist parties and stuff. Well, if China was really communist, then there wouldn't be Chinese tourists and there wouldn't be Chinese running around buying property.
Yeah. How would you describe them? I guess, you know, it's easy to throw out the communism label. And even I do it. Of course, I talk about our Democrats. Our Democrats are so commie that the Communist Party of USA no longer runs a candidate for president. Because they say that the Democrats fulfill that role, you know, apparently.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. You know, what would you call Russia and or China if there was a label? Certainly authoritarian, definitely collectivist, but then I guess the United States collectivist too, to a lesser extent, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the Russian political system is no different than the European one. You know, nobody wants to talk about it. But for example, the head of the EU never stands for election. It's the people in parliament that decide who will be the president. It's the same thing in Russia. That's the Duma that selects the head of Russia. And only in the United States is the actual head of state run separately. The same thing in Japan. So it really depends upon, you know, what you're, how you define these things. Is it authoritarian, or is it simply more of a parliamentary type system?
It's interesting that you know, you're talking about the EU. I recall her saying the other day, the head of the EU, saying that she was not real happy about what the Italy voters misbehaved. Italian voters misbehaved and didn't act like poodles, apparently. And the head of the EU says we have ways to, you know, this is, you know, not a good thing, implying that you know, a nice country you have there, it'd be a shame if something bad happened to it. Isn't that interesting?
Look, I mean, the EU is just as authoritarian as Russia, actually. They demand everybody has to comply with whatever they say. That's why I've also, you know, warned that, you know, the EU is not going to last. I mean, they're at odds now with Poland, Hungary, and Italy. And, you know, it's this idea of one policy suits all does not work. Mm-hmm. When they were forming the EU, they actually came to me. They attended our conference there in London. And they were saying, oh, well, if you join the EU, everybody will pay the same interest rate. I warned them that's not going to happen. And I said, you have to consolidate the debts. But they were trying to compare it to the United States. Mm-hmm. I said, the United States has a federal government. Okay, yes, one interest rate applies to that. But we have 50 states, and each state pays a different interest rate according to their credit rating. I said, the same thing's going to happen in Europe. And they basically said, you know, please don't tell anybody. we'll consolidate the debts later, but we just have to get the euro in. And here we are more than 20 years later, and they still haven't consolidated debts. And so it becomes more of an authoritarian regime where they try to dictate to the individual members what you can spend, what you can do, all because there is no federal one national debt.
Now, Martin Armstrong, isn't this in essence what the United States is doing with our foreign policy to on a larger or lesser extent to make the European Union dance to our tune, to make Russia dance to our tune, et cetera, et cetera? How would you see that?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, every, you know, Russia, China, United States, and even Europe, they all have their, you know, left and their right sides. Our extreme right, you know, was probably the leader of the pack was John McCain. And there was nothing Russia could ever do that he would have ever changed his opinion, period. So it was just a question of, you know, these people get it in their mind. And when communism fell in 89, you know, they couldn't sleep at night. They still had it. They have to be our enemy.
Was that the real mistake? Not that communism fell, but the fact that it didn't fall, but it just fell and left a vacuum. And so there's no one to fight against in the great American empire. Is it that simple? It sounds pretty cynical, really.
It's, I don't know. These people just cannot sleep at night without an enemy. So, I mean, you know, all we ever heard from John McCain was, oh, you know, Putin wants to resurrect the old USSR. And this book I'm putting out, I got all the declassified documents from the Clinton administration.
Yeah, I was looking at the part of it that had the invitation to invite Russia to join NATO, of all things.
Yes.
I mean, there it is in black and white, the actual invitation.
I was in the middle of all this stuff, and I can tell you that first in 91, NATO invited Russia when Gorbachev was there to join. That's why there was a coup. The hardliners staged a coup when he was on vacation, and because they saw that if he agreed, then it was kind of like Russia surrendered to the United States. So that's when Yeltsin stood on the tanks and said, don't fire on our people, and the military didn't support them. So the hardliners lost, and the coup was over. But that's why that took place. Then I have all the documents to show that the oligarchs were then trying to get a hold of Russia. And, you know, Yeltsin was caught in between the communists that were still there who wanted to resurrect the USSR and the oligarchs who basically all the documents show that was being led by Barasnovsky and I knew Edmund Safran. I got in the middle of all this stuff that they were. Safra had basically set up the Bank of New York and said, oh, gee, a $7 billion money laundering was going on there. And so the feds ran into that. And then they used that in July 99 to blackmail Yeltsin and said, hey, if you don't resign and make Barasnovsky the head, this is all going to come out. It leads to you. And he realized he's being blackmailed by the oligarchs on one side to take over Russia and the communists on the other side, who filed an impeachment motion to try and get rid of him. So that's why he turned to Putin. Putin was, and all the documents show, he was not a member of any party. He was part of the KGB up until 91. As soon as Russia fell, he quit. And he was just a low-level guy. He was never high up or anything like that. And all the documents show Yeltsin telling Clinton, look, you know, it took me a long time to find somebody who would continue our policies and was not, you know, part of either side. And that was Putin. And
now you try to get someone in the State Department to admit this now. You probably have some great difficulty because right now we only know Putin as the embodiment of evil. And by the way, I'm speaking with Martin Armstrong. Martin Armstrong, his book coming out, The Plot to Seize Russia. I guess my question is here, is it the plot for the United States to seize Russia, or is it like a global seizure of Russia, is your theory?
Well, before it began with the bankers and the oligarchs, and the main oligarch that wanted the power was Boris Barasnovsky, but then he, you know, his bodyguard thinks MI6 killed him. They said, oh, it was suicide. You know, everybody suicides, you know. Mm-hmm. But
convenient.
So I don't think that they have actually changed. I mean, they know that Putin is not the embodiment of the devil. And in fact, you just saw the head of Chechnya come out and said, oh, we should really just nuke you know, Ukraine. And it was Putin that came out and said, no, we have to have a balanced approach. If you really remove Putin, I'm telling you that the hardliners will probably seize power. And then you're in for some real trouble because these people are just as hateful of Americans as the neocons are of Russians. The part you have to understand that is really brainwashing people is that you demonize the head of a country. And then what happens is that is then transferred to all those people. They did the same thing with Assad. They did the same thing with, you know, Hussein. They did it even with Trump, and they're trying to do it again by criminalizing him one way or another and then say, see, all Republicans are criminals.
Right.
It's part of a strategy. So by demonizing Putin, they create this hatred of all Russians. I saw even on eBay, you know, complaints, how can you allow any Russian to sell anything on here? I mean, in any country, there's left and there's right. So there's people that agree with Biden and people that don't agree with him. The same thing in Russia. You know, it's never one-sided. There's always people on both sides. And it's just the same thing they did to the Japanese in World War II. They just locked up everybody who was, you know, Japanese. If you were born here and you lived here for 30 years, you still went to jail. It's just part of a propaganda strategy. And if you demonize the head of a country, then you get everybody like, yeah, they're all bad. Let's go get them all. And that's how they create war.
Well, it's groupthink on a massive scale, you know, essentially. And how close, there's a lot of talk, Martin, about nuclear, the possibility of nuclear. And you see PSAs running in New York City, talking about, well, how to deal with radiation issues and little, you know, happy music playing, et cetera, et cetera. And we're just looking at this as civil defense, I suppose. What does Socrates have to say about the chances for world conflict, your AI assistant there at Armstrong Economics?
Next year does not look good at all. But it doesn't look good on a civil unrest perspective as well as war. I would be very concerned if you remove Putin, because the other hardliners they're going to seize power.
As bad as you may think Putin is, what's behind him is even worse, is what you're saying.
He's nothing. I mean, he looks like a Boy Scout compared to the rest of the
yikes.
Guys. And it's just the hatred that has been there for a long time on both sides. And I think we're probably headed into World War III, but most likely after 24. Next year is going to be, you know, probably the year from political hell globally. But because you also have this insanity of sanctions and things of this nature. If you just look at the Roman Empire, how did, you know, Rome have peace for 1,000 years? Yes, they conquered all these different places, but then what happened was they realized, hey, it's better to be part of the whole than to be separate, because Rome had free trade. There were no tariffs or anything like that. So anybody in France could make, you know, pottery or whatever and sell it to everybody else in the empire.
Well, we seem to be going exactly the opposite direction right now, aren't we? The entire world?
I mean, that's what created peace. It was free trade. If everybody is trading together, then certainly, you know, you're not going to, the people would prevent Putin from waging war because, hey, I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to lose this. When the U.S. does it, it only makes the Russians all hate Americans. They know it's not Putin. And the same thing in China. As long as there is free trade and everybody's dependent upon a market in the United States, then Xi is not going to, you know, fare very well if he wants to attack the United States. I mean, that's the way you basically create world peace. And it's well established just looking at the Roman Empire and how it worked.
Martin, what about safe havens? Are there any safe havens left at the moment? And I noticed that everybody's told don't ever touch buying gold or anything like that, even though central banks seem to like buying gold, and Russia and China and other places seem to be buying gold. What am I missing here? Just curious.
Well, the main reason gold has been going down is that they're hunting, you know, gold globally at this point. And it's not like the good old days, you could take a roll of $20 gold pieces, stick it in your pocket, hop on a plane, and fly someplace. You can't do that anymore. It's been very, very difficult that way, that gold has lost its mobility. There was a woman from Canada that just flew into San Francisco. She had $30,000 worth of gold, and they confiscated it. They call, it's civil asset forfeiture. So it doesn't matter. You know, you go to Italy, and if you got too much jewelry, they take it off and they weigh it. It's more of the governments are really falling apart. They've been running deficits since World War II. with no intention of ever paying anything back.
Indeed.
So it's a question of the system is falling apart, and I'm afraid this is why they need war. And this is what's behind the Great Reset. And you take George Soros' idea of a one, you know, open society. It's all this idea of a one world government. And
the people don't want centralization, though.
They don't. And this is, it's the same theory that was used to create the EU. The idea is that we'll end war if there's only one government. Rome was also one government, and it broke apart, and there were civil wars. So the theory is just doesn't hold up to history. But this is the theory that they do. I mean, you can look on my site. I even have a video clip of the old President Holland and Merkel standing up there saying, "Oh, the whole purpose of the EU was to end European war," and I mean, that will not work. I mean, you see, you know, cultures and resentments back and forth all the time. And this is what we're really, you know, facing here. But these people think that if they can conquer Russia without any nuclear confrontation, and that's what this is all about. They're using Ukraine as a spearhead. And even Hillary Clinton came out and, oh, we can wear them down as we did in Afghanistan. And they think that then they can just run in. And there's this other theory that they have always propagated. I mean, I knew Bill Kristol. He used to teach.
The neocon's neocon, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I knew him. And he wrote a book on, you know, that justified the war going into Iraq. The theory was, if we remove all these dictators, then democracy will be secure for Israel in the Middle East. And it's absolutely absurd. And it's the same theory again. They think that if they remove Putin, we walk in and the people will cheer us and there'll be a ticker tape parade.
Throwing flowers at us as we're, marching to the Kremlin. Got it. All right. So once again, I want to go back to that financial thing. Is there any safe haven at all in your view? Because you've always said, I've read you for years, you always talk about watching the capital flows. Well, the capital flows are still coming to the United States, are they not?
Yes.
Okay, they're still coming here. Are we the safe haven, whether or not, in spite of the fact that how shaky it may look?
For right now, yes. You have, North Korea shooting missiles off over Japan. Japanese money's, hopping on every plane and boat to head over here. You have the likelihood of the war in Ukraine getting worse. So you have a lot of European money just bailing out and everybody's coming to America for right now. All right. The same thing happened in the Great Depression. All the money came here that drove the dollar up so high. Mm-hmm. Our politicians didn't understand that, got into protectionism. And that's why Roosevelt confiscated gold and then devalued the dollar in 34. And we're seeing the same patterns on capital flows again. I mean, the capital will come here from Asia and, from Europe. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. I don't understand these people with their ideas, but clearly you go after Russia. They think they can take down one at a time. And I don't think China is that stupid and North Korea is not that stupid. They will all band together. And then it's going to be, one group against the other. And I think at that point in time, that's when the dollar goes down. That's when you start looking at gold. But for right now, near term, we're looking at the capital coming into America. When you start seeing those powers join together, then when it begins to look like it's going to be war between the United States and everybody else, then you're going to be looking at gold going up, the dollar going down, and then the flight will probably be off to South America.
Interesting. Interesting indeed. What do you think? Can we order the plot to seize Russia on your site, Armstrong Economics?
In a few weeks, yes.
In a few weeks.
We're going to print actually this week.
Okay, good. Glad to hear that. I don't want you to, of course, you're not going to give away the whole story, naturally, but what do you think we will, what is some of what you think we will be most surprised about? Because, like I said, you bring the declassified documents, your personal experience. You have been a political prisoner of the United States in a certain form of another. What do you think we'd be most surprised about the plot to seize Russia?
I think that, you know, most people, all they hear about is Russia's evil, Russia's evil, and like we wear the white hat. And there's been all these documents reveal, you know, quite a different situation. I've got the phone calls between Yeltsin and Clinton. You know, the terrorists that were attacking Russia from Chechnya, you know, he was on the phone with Clinton saying, hey, listen, this is happening because you're funding these terrorists. You got to stop this. Things like this. I mean, it's and the actual attempts to get involved in regime change, which is very, very, you know, serious. But I mean, you had Biden come out and said, you know, oh, my God, this guy's got to be taken out of power. And then the White House has to say, oh, no, we weren't really talking about regime change when they are. So then they have Zelensky come out and said, oh, he'll enter peace agreements, but only when they overthrow Putin. and we're not talking about regime change here. I mean, for the life of me, I can't imagine the stupidity in Washington, D.C. And I mean, I've got good contacts and none of them agree with their theories. And Putin is the Boy Scout. I'm telling you, you take him out and you're going to have the hardliners who have been there for 20 years.
Yeah, but the Boy Scout with polonium, the Boy Scout with polonium, Martin. See what I'm getting at?
Yeah. Even the, let me, I'll put that also. All the poisonings were not even Putin. They all led to somebody else. And, all that comes out in the book, too.
All right. I'm looking forward to reading that. That is for sure. And, of course, your site, of course, is a daily read. And I really appreciate it. And like I said, I think what I most learn from you, and I always pay attention to, is the capital flows. It doesn't matter what people are saying about stock markets or whatever it is. Watch the capital flows, right? That's where you will learn so much about what's going on.
Yes. I mean, that's the main thing. And that's what made the United States what it is. We were bankrupt in 1896. That's when J.P. Morgan had to lend $100 million to bail out the Treasury in gold. And it was World War One and World War Two that sent all the money here. So that at the end of World War Two, the U.S. was the reserve currency with 76% of the world gold reserves. We were bankrupt before that. So, you know, it's just, you know, if you got tanks running down the street, are you going to leave your money there in the gold?
No, you won't. You'll find a way. All right. Martin, I know you have other people to talk to. I appreciate you taking a few minutes this morning. ArmstrongEconomics.com is a must read. It's a daily read for me, and I know other people there feel the same way. The book coming out here very soon, The Plot to Seize Russia. Sounds like a page turner. I know chapter one in my hand right now is already very good. And you bring the documents, which I also find quite stimulating. You be well, and we'll have you back. Thanks for coming on. Be well.
Oh, thank you very much.
And once again, Martin Armstrong of Armstrong Economics, 839 at KMED and KCMD.